Welcome to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of MCPMag.com, and today is August 21st. Here's what you'll hear in this week's episode. Microsoft sues testing materials vendor TestKing. Dell recalls 4.1 million laptop batteries. Microsoft betas a blog editor. And Microsoft hires a former McAfee executive. As well, this week I have an interview with Paul Gosteen, CEO at Provision Networks. All that and more when we return to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Before we get going, I'd like to say how nice it is to know that many of you are paying attention to the show and doing so on a regular basis. Is it the shirt giveaway that keeps you coming back? Not likely, as I've heard many of you tell me that it's a good way to listen to get the news without having to spend time reading it, which looks a lot like you're not working. So I do appreciate it, and I do hope that many of you continue to write in to get into the t-shirt drawing. You have to do this every week if you want to continue trying to win. And for those of you who have already won, you can stop for a while. I'll get you back in the drawing after about 2 months. Anyhow, to enter the t-shirt drawing, remember to send me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com with Redmond t-shirt on the subject line. Simple, right? I thought so. We'll announce this week's winner in the IT Web Gems segment. Also, once again, I'd like to remind iTunes or iPod users that you can now download the show as it gets posted every week. Just point your software to mcpmag.com/rss/podcasts. That's podcast with an S at the end. Remember to pass on the good news to your colleagues if you find this show worthwhile. The number of listeners who get the show by iTunes is growing, but I can always use more, so pass this show on. Okay, with the usual housekeeping out of the way, let's go to the headlines. Microsoft has filed a federal lawsuit against testing materials vendor TestKing, alleging the company is illegally selling the actual answers to its certification exams. The suit claims that the defendants have provided and are providing, without license or permission from Microsoft, the original copyrighted exam content for Microsoft certification exams. According to the suit, TestKing is helping candidates cheat at Microsoft's expense. TestKing operates other sites through which the company sells the infringing testing materials, according to the complaint. The lawsuit claims multiple counts of copyright infringement and asks for a permanent injunction to stop TestKing from continuing to sell or distribute the materials. It also seeks damages. Additionally, Microsoft's attorneys asked the court to turn the internet domain testking.com over to them. TestKing's website lists a mailing address for a company named Certification Trends Limited in the UK, but no phone number, and the site doesn't identify the company's executives or management. Due to the inability to initially identify who runs the company, Microsoft issued what is called a John Doe lawsuit with the defendants to be identified later. On its site, TestKing claims to sell testing materials for a wide variety of the different technology companies' certifications, in addition to Microsoft's, including Adobe, Cisco, and Oracle. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer is the first to report the suit. Microsoft says it began laying the groundwork for new generation Exchange Server 2007 exams. According to an MCP Flash newsletter sent last week, Microsoft's Learning Group is developing three new exams for Exchange 2007. One exam will target the technology specialist level, while the other two will be requirements for an MCITP Exchange Messaging Administration title. Microsoft hasn't released details yet on the subject matter, objectives, or release dates, and it's not known at this time whether Microsoft will provide an upgrade path for those holding the MCSE messaging title. Company representatives said it would comment on the exams in the following weeks. Exchange Server 2007 is targeted for a late 2006, early 2007 release. A solid beta 2 was released on July 24th. Here's an interesting development. If you check the Microsoft MCP site, there's no sign of two new exams for Windows Mobile 5.0 implementers and developers anywhere. The only information for them so far appears on the Pearson View testing site. Dubbed 71500TS, Windows Mobile 5.0 Implementing and Managing, and 71540TS, Windows Mobile 5.0 Application Development. The basic topics of these exams are easy to figure out, but Microsoft hasn't released any details on its website to give anyone a clue. Windows 5.0 Mobile, a version of the Windows operating system developed for smartphones, PDAs, and mobile phones and embedded devices, was released in May last year. And here's one last piece of cert news. Cisco Systems announced that it's updating the exams for its Cisco Certified Network Professional, as well as revising this recertification policy for all of its professional level titles. Of the current four exams for Cisco's popular mid-level title, the 642-821 BCRAN and the 642-831 CIT will be replaced with new exams. And the other two, the 642-811 BCMSN and 642-801 BCSI, will be updated. The new exams are available immediately worldwide at Cisco-authorized testing centers. The old exams will be retired December 31, 2006. Now on to other news out on the wire. In the largest electronics-related recall involving the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Dell agreed to replace 4.1 million notebook computer batteries made by Sony Corporation because they can burst into flames, as you may have heard in previous IT WebGem segments. A Dell spokesman said Monday that the Sony batteries were placed in notebooks that were shipped between April 1, 2004 and July 18th of this year. Spokesman Ira Williams said, in rare cases, a short circuit could cause the battery to overheat, causing a risk of smoke and or fire. It happens in rare cases, he continued, but we opted to take this broad action immediately. The battery packs were included in some models of Dell's Latitude, Inspiron, XPS, and Precision Mobile Workstation notebooks. Dell launched a website, www.dellbatteryprogram.com, that described the affected models. Williams said the website tells consumers how to get free replacement batteries from Dell. Rick Clancy, a Sony spokesman, said the companies have studied the problems with the battery packs intensely for more than a month after getting reports of about a half dozen fires or smoking laptops in the U.S. Meanwhile, the recall has proven to be good news for rival Japanese electronics companies Sanyo and Matsushita, pushing the struggling company's shares higher Wednesday. Sony, Sanyo, and Matsushita, which makes Panasonic goods, are the three major Japanese producers of lithium-ion batteries, which are rechargeable and used in laptops, digital cameras, music players, cell phones, and other gadgets. Also for Dell, on Thursday was bad news, posting disappointing second-quarter earnings amid a regulatory probe. The company also announced an expanded partnership to put AMD chips into new lines of Dell servers and desktop PCs as early as next month. The deal was revealed as the company missed Wall Street expectations, in which second-quarter profit fell 36% to $605 million, and days after the battery recall. Dell also said it was cooperating with an informal investigation by the SEC over accounting and financial reporting matters for certain past fiscal years. Dell said it did not believe there were any issues, but it also was conducting its own internal investigation. Dell reported earnings of 22 cents per share on sales of $14.1 billion, below the earnings of 32 cents per share on sales of 14.2 the company had initially forecast, and 10 cents less than analysts polled by Thomson Financial had expected. In the same period a year ago, Dell had earnings of 38 cents a share and sales of $13.4 billion. In other big earnings news, CA's fiscal first quarter profit fell 64% on increased expenses, and the business software maker said it will trim its workforce by about 10%, or 1,700 positions. The company formerly known as Computer Associates said it expects charges of about $200 million for the restructuring that also includes facilities consolidation and other cost-saving measures. John Swainson, CA's chief executive, said, "We are not satisfied with our cost structure, and we are implementing an expense reduction plan to improve the company's efficiency and competitive position." For the quarter ended June 30th, CA's earnings dropped to $35 million, or 6 cents per share, from $97 million, or 16 cents per share during the same period last year. And that's how last week shaped up in certification and product news. You can find more of that on the mcpmag.com and certcities.com websites daily. After the break, an interview with Paul Gosteen at Provision Networks here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Welcome back. Thanks once again for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. This week, an interview with Paul Gosteen, CEO at Provision Networks, who sees lots of promise in virtual desktop consolidation when it's paired up with thin client computing. It's just one of the issues he covers in this interview I just had with him last Friday.
This week I have Paul Gosteen, CEO of Provision Networks. He's here to talk about his company and the market for thin client computing. I guess the first thing you should tell us is how long has Provision Networks been in business, and what's the company's mission?
Michael, thank you for having me. Provision Networks was founded in 2004 to deliver on the promise of server-based computing technologies for the mass market. In late 2004, we acquired the intellectual property of Emergent Online's Syncentral Suite, which at the time was in its fourth generation of developing and marketing a suite of terminal services enhancements. We did so to deliver a complete solution without reliance on third-party tools. We saw the opportunity to deliver a complete solution, access solution for the mid-market, the segment that was sorely neglected and forced to either go upstream or way downstream. Today, our mission is three-pronged. One, develop and market compelling alternative application delivery solutions for mass market adoption. Two, deliver innovative products and solutions for emerging markets. And three, deliver an undeniable value to customers with the highest satisfaction levels.
Give that to me in plain English right now. What current strategy as far as how you plan to get your products out into the market?
We are 100% channel-based. We work and leverage channel partners worldwide and market through them, through seminars, webinars, proofs of concept, and deliver solutions to end users.
Well, let's see. I guess before we discuss the latest version of Provision Management Networks, which is probably what we're here to talk about, right?
Yep.
Can you tell us more about thin client computing and how you're targeting SMBs, and how does your solution differ from those out in the market?
Sure. As you may know, the market for thin client computing is not an emerging market. It is somewhat mature, but has tremendous longevity. It's been growing quite nicely with double-digit growth rates for the last several years. Baird estimates the long-term size of the server-based computing market can be as high as $2.5 billion. Today, it is estimated that Microsoft generates about $250 million in revenues from terminal services CALs. With their commitment to terminal services and the upcoming release of Longhorn in late 07, it's estimated that terminal services will contribute close to $1 billion to Microsoft's revenues. That bodes very well for all players in the market, but especially for us at Provision Networks. Why? Because our solution is designed to meet the needs of the mid-market, the last frontier or most pervasive segment, if you will. On the very high end, large enterprise clients are spoken for. Citrix claims that 100% of the Fortune 100, or probably the Fortune 500, use their presentation server product, although only 10 to 15% of those enterprise desktops are accounted for. On the lower end, Microsoft satisfies the needs of most small deployments, you know, one to two servers or few servers with fewer occasional users. Provision Networks has delivered the solution for the rest of the market. All the features you would expect at the enterprise level, such as load balancing, SSL gateway for RDP in the DMZ, seamless Windows, sessions sharing, but then also added the features needed for rapid adoption at the mid-market, you know, a simple but robust method to publish applications, built-in security features, because customers at the mid-market may not necessarily want to spend more money to make their solution secure. Also, an effective method to manage user profiles, and out-of-the-box support for the latest handheld devices such as BlackBerry, Palm, Pocket PC. Really, in a nutshell, simpler administration for the IT staff, because again, at the mid-market, customers do not have armies of IT people to manage their server-based computing farm. They may have one or two staff members managing all components and facets of the network. From an end-user perspective, we deliver an enhanced user experience, making the terminal server session indistinguishable from the local desktop experience. And finally, from a business decision, we deliver a more cost-effective solution with a higher return on investment.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about some of the customer-driven features of the provision management framework.
Yeah, with the latest release, the main features we delivered in version 5.6, which is our latest release that came from customer feedback, are multi-monitor support, content and desktop publishing, support for Kerberos, smart cards, two-factor authentication, supporting RSA and secure computing, as well as desktop integration. Other features we're working on, based on customer requests, also include 3D OpenGL acceleration, latency reduction, JPEG acceleration, bidirectional audio, a Java client, as well as support for voice over IP.
Okay. That seems kind of interesting. Like JPEG acceleration, voice over IP. Can you tell me about some specific customer instances where those are being deployed?
Yeah, without mentioning specific customer names, for JPEG or 3D OpenGL acceleration in general, clients may be deploying applications such as AutoCAD or in the medical field, applications that require looking at X-rays online and things like that, that require the ability to accelerate graphics through those applications. From a voice over IP perspective, a lot of clients are deploying voice over IP technologies and would like to deploy, and they're deploying their enterprise application through a server-based computing model and are looking to deploy a soft phone through that application delivery method and deliver the voice over IP traffic as well, potentially through that session.
Okay. So, for the soft phone, that sounds like an interesting application. As far as what kind of company would be doing something like that?
I think most companies at the enterprise level have deployed voice over IP. We're seeing a lot of demand and adoption beginning to take hold in the mid-market for voice over IP solutions. Companies that have call center type applications in the financial marketplace, banking, etc., in healthcare, those verticals are very strong for call center type adoption and voice over IP deployment.
You introduced a Project Titan at the VMworld conference last year.
That's right.
What are your virtual desktop infrastructure plans, and how will they be different from what's out in the market?
Well, I'm glad you asked me the question. We're quite excited about the potential of the hosted desktop or VDI space. We joined the VMware Technology Alliance in 2005, and then were invited by VMware to join the VDI Alliance and be a charter member earlier this year. Virtualization server consolidation have been red hot for the last few years. We're now beginning to see a trend for desktop consolidation. That is the premise of VDI, allowing an enterprise to consolidate and centrally manage their desktop and even access them from a remote location. By doing so, organizations are effectively turning the Windows desktop into a single-user terminal server, hosted on either ESX or virtual server, and allowing users to RDP into it. We're uniquely positioned to capitalize on this market segment as it continues to evolve. We are the only provider of a complete RDP-based solution on the market. Our server-based computing relies and leverages Microsoft Terminal Services RDP protocols. So, again, we're the only provider of a complete RDP-based solution, and all the nuances of a server-based computing environment will be faced in the VDI environment. Items like how do you secure the RDP access, how do you manage user profiles, how do you publish their desktop. We have solved these. In addition, we have the last mile technologies needed to transform the virtual desktop into reality. Once that desktop is hosted, how will users be able to print to local or even network printers? How will they be able to synchronize their PDAs? Again, we have already solved those problems, putting us in a unique position reason to deliver a compelling solution. What we are working on today is a broker, what we call a virtual machine broker, which will allow virtual desktop machines to be created, pooled, managed, and monitored. We plan to deliver the commercial release by VMworld in early November this year.
Well, it sounds pretty innovative. When do you think the initiative will be like in full bloom?
We are beginning to see strong adoption for VDI. We're talking to customers about deploying thousands and thousands of desktops. Traditionally, in the past, server-based computing had been adopted at a more tactical level, where you have applications or certain users at remote locations that need to access applications, and the fastest, maybe most effective way of delivering these applications, even over low bandwidth connections, was server-based computing model. We have seen more enterprise adoption at the mid-market level because it is easier to manage that desktop in a server-based computing environment when you have few IT resources. In terms of VDI, we are seeing large enterprises now adopt the VDI solution to deploy an entire enterprise desktop, again, across the enterprise. So we are beginning to see that, and we believe that within the next 12 months, it may be just about mainstream.
Okay. All right. And so where can they find out more about the Project Titan and the project and the provision management framework?
Today they can visit us on our website at provisionnetworks.com and contact us for more info. They can join us at our worldwide end user conference in September, WTS World, and at VMworld 2006 in LA, that's in November, for major exciting announcements.
All right, great. All right, thanks, Paul. That was great. That was very informative.
Thank you very much, Michael, and thank you for having me.
Okay.
We'll be back with IT Web Gems after this break, here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Back, and thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Just my weekly reminder that I'm giving away one Redmond t-shirt every week to one lucky person who wins the drawing. To try for one, all you have to do is enter the next giveaway by sending me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld at mcpmag.com. And tell me whether you are a new or regular listener, and whether you listen on the iPod or some other type of device like that, or a computer, or streaming through some other device. Any additional comments or feedback are appreciated, but not necessary, to make you a winner. And speaking of winners, among the two entries this week, Bruce Szabo in Ohio is it. And because there were just two entries this week, Andrea Fackler in Warner Robins, Georgia, also gets one. Congrats to both of them. They'll be getting their t-shirts in the mail shortly. For everyone else, good luck next week. Now, here's what caught my eye this week for IT Web Gems. Remember MIT Lab's Nicholas Negroponte and his One Laptop Per Child initiative? The idea will begin to put down roots in Thailand, with Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra announcing that his country will be the first to distribute the cheap laptops. Thaksin has an interest in the project, with his background as a successful businessman in the telecommunications sector. Negroponte's group will send 30 computers to Thailand in October and 500 more in November, with the idea that the Thai government will provide them in lieu of books to children in rural areas first, to test the viability of the project where access to technology is limited. The computers come at a cost of around $100 each and are designed to be cheap and sturdy, run on hand-pumped electricity in generators, and use a free Linux OS. Of course, some critics consider the project to be a misallocation of resources. Before most of us could even try the service, it looks like Boeing is going to shutter its connection by Boeing, an in-flight internet access service. The service costs about $10 to $30 per flight for broadband Wi-Fi and was introduced back in 2002. It was offered on European and Asian commercial flights, but not by any U.S. carriers. And in a statement from Boeing CEO Jim McNerney, the market for the service never materialized here. For such a large company, Amazon certainly finds some novel ways to use data. And Amazon has filed a patent application on one data-gathering method that will allow customers to be able to gather information on you for lists that can target you based on birthdays, interests, and past buying habits. Sounds nifty, but it also is cause for alarm with privacy advocates, says writer Evan Schumann in the eWeek article that made this week's IT Web Gems. Schumann says that companies like Amazon often file patent applications to protect intellectual property, and the filing of this particular patent doesn't guarantee that the company will even use it. Amazon, for its part, says it doesn't intend to deploy the system. Still, privacy advocates say that you should concern yourself with the sites that are able to make a profile of you based on what you buy, when you buy it, and for what discernible reason you made a purchase based on past buying habits. Here's an interesting IT web gem off the beaten path, and it's literally out of this world. The solar system will look a bit more crowded at night if the International Astronomical Union has its way. The IAU is proposing adding 3 more planets to the roster, after refining the definition of what a planet is. Basically, the definition is simple, they say. Planets are round and they orbit a star. This week, the group will assemble in Prague and vote to approve the definition. Once approved, one object called Charon, which was formerly known as a moon of Pluto, and Ceres, a large object whose orbit sits generally between Mars and Jupiter, will be known as planets, as well as an object with an orbit far outside of Pluto called UB313 for now. Because of the change in definition, there is a possibility of 12 more objects that may be added to the list. The question for most of us is, will we notice? So back here on the third rock, it appears that aliens are making their presence known here by way of crop circles, and in one particular instance, they've let it be known that they prefer Firefox. At least that's the story we'd like to tell here at MCP Radio for IT Web Gems. Some Firefox nerds from the University of Oregon confessed to descending on an Amity, Oregon wheat field and creating a 220-foot diameter version of the Firefox logoed crop circle. I'm not sure this particular effort will rank too highly on the list of top college pranks, though. Okay, here's something a bit more mundane. One Peter Hinchins thinks the caps lock key is enough of a nuisance to campaign against it, calling the key useless. Hinchins leads a group called Caps Off, a grassroots effort with a blog and a forum that's trying to get manufacturer attention and have them redesign the keyboard with no caps lock key. Some feel the idea is pointless and self-serving, since more savvy users point to numerous resources on the internet that show how to reassign that key for some other useful purpose. Hinchins, for his part, knows that most new users aren't as savvy and continue to type with the key on, which means that new users often naively resort to shouting in posts or are the cause of many password problems having to do with the caps lock key set on by accident. Even though this story belongs in the usual real headlines, I thought I'd mention it here because of its IT web gemminess. Seems one of the updates from Microsoft's last patch Tuesday is giving IE the heebie-jeebies when visiting some websites. The problem affects IE 6 with Service Pack 1 and Windows XP and Windows 2000. Microsoft has identified the problem, which is people using that version of IE that has HTTP 1.1 with compression on is making IE bail out on some websites. The fix for now is to disable that version of the HTTP protocol in IE's advanced settings menu until Microsoft reissues the fix this coming August 22nd. And my final story this week has to do with a twist on connection speed. If you like to know how fast your connection is, you can go to a number of websites that will tell you, but one site called speedtest.net is different. Speedtest.net will play out a nice visual representation with a graphic of a test packet going out to several servers around the world. I've tried it, and here are my last set of numbers from August 17th. To the Los Angeles server, 6,048 kilobits per second upload, 491 download. New York, 2,636 upload, 489 download. To London, 3,221 up, 486 down. To San Francisco, 6,063 up, 494 down. And finally, to Auckland, 522 up, 461 down. If you want to compare notes, check out speedtest.net, and I'll read some of the more interesting results in a following podcast. All of these tests were done at 12:18 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time on Wednesday, August 17th, if you want to approximate the conditions of my test. I'm also doing them from my computer in Vista, California. And on that note, that's the week that was in IT Web Gems. If you have one, send it to me at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com. You'll get a Redmond t-shirt if I use it on the next podcast. We'll be back with Microsoft News from ENT Mag after this quick break here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Welcome back, and I do thank you for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Here's what made headlines this week over at entmag.com. Hoping to spur interest among video game enthusiasts, creative types, and students, Microsoft said it plans to offer a consumer version of the professional software tools used to create video games for its Xbox 360 console. The XNA Game Studio Express program, an offshoot of the company's more robust XNA framework, will be available August 30th for a $99 annual subscription. The software, which requires a Windows PC to operate, will let anyone with the desire to create their own video games and then share them at Microsoft's Xbox Live online game service, said Peter Moore, a Microsoft vice president. The program would be a first for consoles, which traditionally have been the exclusive domain of skilled programmers, artists, and designers. Moore said the program is basic compared to the Pro Tools, which cost tens of thousands of dollars. Though it's designed to eliminate much of the tedious hand-coding involved in making a game from scratch, some basic programming skills are still going to be needed for the consumer version. Microsoft has released the first beta test version of its coming entry into the realm of blog publishing tools, based on a familiar theme. What you see is what you get, or WYSIWYG. With Windows Live Writer, the company is aiming to make the process of composing, updating, and maintaining a blog much easier for non-technical users than it has been to date, the company said in a post on the developer team's blog. J.J. Allaire said in the post, Windows Live Writer is a desktop application that makes it easier to compose compelling blog posts using Windows Live Spaces or your current blog service. The idea is to enable users to easily compose blog pages using a WYSIWYG interface that looks a lot like Microsoft Word. It also aims to make it easy to add elements like photos, maps, music, and movies. For instance, a blogger could provide a map with a blog entry that draws data from Windows Live local maps. Allaire is well known in blog circles. In March, Microsoft bought his company, OnFolio, and has incorporated its RSS-based end-user information collection tool as an add-in to the Windows Live toolbar. The company has also released a software developer's kit to help third parties extend Writer to support additional content types, such as images from online photo publishing sites, embedded video or audio players, also product thumbnails and or links from e-commerce sites, and tags from tagging services, according to Allaire's post. In a move clearly aimed at Microsoft, IBM announced it has ported its Enterprise Instant Messaging client to run atop Linux on the desktop and plans to have a Linux server product out next year. To date, Lotus SameTime has only run on Windows-based clients, but the release of SameTime 7.5 for Linux later this month will change that. Adam Gartenberg, offering manager for real-time and team collaboration at IBM Workplace and Lotus Software, said in an interview, "It's all about choice. SameTime for Linux is for all the people considering Linux as a desktop operating system." Although IBM has been vociferous in its support of Linux over the past several years, it just recently began delivering key client technologies on desktop versions of the platform. For instance, in July, Big Blue began shipping a Lotus Notes client for Linux. Now, the second major cornerstone of IBM's enterprise collaboration strategy, Enterprise Instant Messaging, will attempt to sweeten IBM's Linux collaboration message. According to IBM, Lotus SameTime support for Linux will be rolled out in two phases. Phase 1, the Linux desktop client for Lotus SameTime, will be delivered in 30 days as Lotus SameTime 7.5. Support for the Linux server is expected in the first half of 2007. The SameTime announcement came as part of one big announcement the company made, in which it revealed a roadmap that IBM plans to follow that will look at what IBM calls key open source initiatives beyond Linux, aimed at accelerating the adoption of open standards and extending existing product lines to reach new customers. On the top of IBM's list of open source initiatives are client-side middleware and developer tools built on the Eclipse platform-independent application framework, web application servers based on Apache's open source projects like Geronimo, and data servers built on the Apache Derby database, as well as IBM DB2 Express C, which is available license-free. Other initiatives include work on systems management, including the open source Apache storage project, work on open hardware architectures through participation in power.org and blade.org, and a focus on grid computing and IBM research, business consulting, and technology services. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Microsoft is shipping the first community technology preview of its next-generation data access libraries for the .NET programming framework. The data access technology, known as Active Data Objects or ADO.NET, provides a way for Visual Studio developers to deal with data sources and services programmatically. Officially called the ADO.NET vNext August CTP, the availability of the libraries for download was published on the ADO.NET team blog last Tuesday. The preview contains the ADO.NET Entity Framework, including the Entity Data Model, which lets developers model data at a higher level of abstraction. The CTP also provides a client views mapping engine to map to and from stored schemas and full query support over EDM schemas using Entity SQL and Microsoft Language Integrated Query Language. The CTP includes the ADO.NET CTP assemblies, some new project templates to create new ADO.NET Entity Framework-based applications, and Entity Model Libraries. It also provides code samples and documentation. And because it's been a slow Microsoft-related news week, here's our last item having to do with the Redmond Giant. Microsoft confirmed that it has hired a well-known security and antivirus executive. Vincent Golato, who headed McAfee's antivirus emergency response team for more than 5 years before leaving the company, will be joining Microsoft as the general manager of security research and response. However, the company is being cagey about exactly what his job will entail. Microsoft declined to provide any further information about Golato's new role or where it fits in the org charts. Microsoft recently entered the consumer antivirus business with its Windows Live OneCare offerings. Additionally, earlier this summer, the company rebranded its line of business security products under the Forefront product banner. Well, you made it to another week of MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Be sure to visit entmag.com and redmondmag.com daily for Microsoft news as it happens. As well, continue to send me email if you'd like to be entered into the Redmond t-shirt drawing. You can send those emails to michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com, which is also the address to send me feedback on this show and its contents. I'm Michael D'Amigo. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to listen to me here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. See you here next week.